You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hey.
Live and direct from under a blanket, it's Niall.
Amigo.
And it's me, Brian. Not under a blanket. Are you blanket free as well, Dwayne? I didn't check on your blanket status.
No, I'm blanket free. My legs are plenty warm.
Yeah,
it's for sound quality, but also it's keeping me warm because it's cold outside.
It's bloody cold, yes. But thankfully, it's not windy today. That was the one thing I appreciated when I went outside for lunch.
I feel like it was snow promised today. It was unusual this time of year.
It snowed when I was outside for about 5 minutes, and I was like, "Is that snow or is that ashes or something?" Because it was like,
is it a volcano? Is it the end of times? Yeah.
Oh man, if only the meteor warning is in full effect there. They weren't mine. Some traffic on the M2.
We are talking about the anime that aired between Monday the 29th of January and Sunday the 4th of February, with a solitary exception of, no, not Bono Bono, but Violet Evergarden, 2018's Bono Bono. In every form. But we shall start with the very first thing from the Monday. Mr. Osomatsu, episode 17. Punishment! Exclamation mark. In. But there was also a Yuma episode before that, where they were in search of the Devil Yeti.
Is that a thing, or is that just to try and make it sound more badass?
I think they always add the, like, devil in front of, or some extra description in front of a...
That's what I figured, yeah. Mm. So it's more scary. Right.
So they did that with the Chupacabras as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Maybe they don't want to get sued by cryptids for...
the History Channel.
I mean, like, they were threatening to getting sued by a lot of things, so yeah, that's understandable. Yes.
Be extra careful. Mm. We'll get to more people being extra careful about being sued later on in the episode.
Or not so much, yeah.
Yeah, they search the Devil Yeti. They get stuck inside a cave, and they're trying to keep each other awake, because if they fall asleep, they'll die in the cold. But then whenever they, like...
When one of them smacks the other person awake, that person beats the shit out of them, because that fucking hurt. And so they just end up with all the crap kicked out of them. But they find the cave that Yami has a very specific photograph of, that is the Devil Yeti's lair. And what comes out? But, a monster.
Well, it's an all-consuming beast, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it is. Dion, in his almost sensible form, we should get a sentence out of him properly. Yeah. This.
He does end in Dion, though.
Dion.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he doesn't sound like an idiot, because he's out here doing training.
Hmm.
And wearing animal skin, which again will not be the last time we see somebody wearing animal skin this episode of the podcast. Mm.
Must be the theme, yeah.
Yeah, it all ties together. I don't think they... Do they get killed at the end of this one?
I think they pass out, so yes. They probably die in the cold. Yeah.
Then we get to punishment, and this is all about Ichimatsu... ruining Jushimatsu's day... by dragging him into his hell of superstitions.
To be fair, like, I think he's right to be superstitious with their fucking luck. But, I mean, like, they bring it on themselves, which they literally do in this, you know.
So what's the meal Mummy and Daddy are making them?
I can't even remember what the fucking meal is, but they're so excited.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yakiniku. It is good stuff.
But yeah, Ichimatsu's like, oh, if we're getting that, then... And then he finds, like, a drink, he meets a cat, he finds a coin. He's like, no, all this good luck's building up. That means it's going to punish me later.
Yeah, it's karma and dharma, man. The universe balances itself out, so I'm going to balance it out for the universe, so I don't... on my own terms, I guess? Yeah.
And he manages to sell Jushimatsu on this, which the only one of the brothers I imagine he could sell it, because he is the stupidest.
Also possibly one of the only ones to listen to him, yeah.
And, so they go around the day. Ichimatsu is having amazing luck throughout the day. Jushimatsu as well, to a certain degree, but Ichimatsu...
He's doing okay, yeah.
Particularly is, and so they continually base... It's not even self-flagellation, it's flagellating each other at this point.
Well, if it's self-flagellation, maybe it doesn't count. Or yeah, yeah. And they get like so unlucky, but things keep coming around their way. They could have just had a great day. Oh, well.
They could have, but no, they can't. So what's the punishment? The strangest one is them forcing themselves to walk through Shibuya.
Because it's too trendy and they look like assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's quite... It carefully animates it so that you see that nobody's bothered by them being there.
No one cares. No one's paying attention to them. They're just other people there. There's not even any super trendy people around. It's just like, yeah, it's just part of town.
But at the end, it starts raining and they're thankful. It's like, oh, we can stop punishing each other now because it's raining. Look how terrible rain is.
A bunch of cars splash puddles on them. It's like even better.
But then they see, is it two people who work at the coffee shop with Totti?
I know we've seen them before. I was wondering if we've seen them in one of the office skits or something like that. Yeah.
So they go into their place of work and they're soaked through. And of course they can see their bras, straps through their white shirts. And so they have to punish themselves some more by throwing themselves off a roof. As they do, they get hit by lightning. And then their four brothers just step over their corpses with the meat.
Not our problem.
More meat for us.
They briefly look at them and it's like, yeah, just par for the course.
Yeah, yeah. Not surprised, not disappointed, just like, let's just walk around them.
And then we get an episode of Mononoke snuck in into Mr. Osomatsu.
Pretty straight-faced, actually.
I was wondering where the fucking flip was going to be, but I was like, no, this is just straight up like kind of a horror story you're telling right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more of a it's more of a ghost story. Because it's not clear end whether the ghost was telling the truth to the couple or just being mischievous to scare them off. But there's definitely a ghost, and there's definitely people get haunted, and it's another case of... what was the one in the first series where they recast all the brothers in different roles? It was the detective episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they didn't, like, change forms as drastically as this one, did they?
No.
So what's the type of ghost it is again?
Oh, they keep saying it.
Zashiki Warashi.
I keep getting a W and a Z mixed up, but it's like a spirit you can't keep in your house. But if you can kind of imprison it there, it'll bring you like good fortune to the household.
Right, right.
And yeah, the first episode of Mononoke also deals with the same sorts of ghosts. And their origin is similar to how this one describes what happened to it.
Like you trap someone and kill them in the house kind of thing.
In this case, the ghost is played by Osomatsu, this little girl ghost. His mother is played by Chorobatsu.
Like, not much of a role, but like get some spooky bits, sure.
And then the couple...
Karamatsu and...
Totti. It's Totti.
Of course it's Totti. Why did I even have to think about that?
It's weird that they all look alike, but if you're going to cast one of them as a woman, it's going to first got to go to Totti.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine all of them now, because we have...
Yeah. But if there's...
And to be fair, three of them in this episode are playing women, so... Yeah. Just one's a creepy old lady and one's a creepy ghost girl.
I guess the others, they've each given them a type of woman to play. To a certain
degree. Right. Yeah.
It's like I think at this point you ground in that Jushi Batsu, if he's got a woman, is going to be a gal.
Right.
It's played absolutely straight. There are no jokes here at all.
I think at all.
Well, I guess the joke is like them initially thinking like, oh, this is actually fine. And then I was like, no, this is actually super fucking scary. That's the closest it gets to a joke.
But yeah, again, that's horror. I think maybe it's...
But yeah. It's the horror flip.
The similar horror relies on a similar sort of thing as comedy does.
Yeah.
In that sense. But yeah, it's really well made. And there's not much more really to say about it. I wonder if it's a specific parody.
Like a specific story, yeah.
Because when I saw the in horror thing, I thought it was going to be another thing and not this in the preview last week.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know whether it was a more specific parody or whether it was just a general parody.
I thought it was going to be like the main segment of it, but it's not really the one I remember.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, it was fine. But I say, I'm not sure I've got much more to comment on it. And I mean, it's arguably a better horror thing than the...
Junji Ito.
That's the word.
yeah, pacing works a lot better for it, all right.
Animation. Has it gotten any better?
Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't said that earlier. Are they, like, you know, getting any improvement on that, or is this kind of staying the same?
I think I stopped it after the slug girl one, because I hate slugs. And I know I'd much more, like, be grossed out if I actually read the comic of that than watched the adaptation.
Next up, we've got Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Goma-chan, episode 62, Sapporo Goma-chan, in which they're going to, at least, going to give him to a zoo.
Give his heel back. You're going to give him back?
The dad's like, oh, we're going to go to the zoo. Are you excited to see seals at the zoo? It's like, I have a secret thing. There was a seal missing at the exact moment that we fucking got Goma-chan. And I don't know where I got this news clipping. I'm not going to explain any of it. But it's like, it's the right thing to do. But he hasn't told Ishibe yet.
And meanwhile, Sugao's dad has got to go back to Japan. And
I fucking love his mom in this.
Yes. That is the highlight.
She's great.
Remember,
she's
like
oh,
time?
yeah, sure, we'll fucking see him. Come on, Sugao-kun, we're going to see your friend. Totally, and it's not going to fuck it up. Like he always fucking does.
we're totally
in Japan, all right.
Right, Ashibe's house. Okay, whatever.
It's only when
she's
outside the door, like ringing the doorbell, that she's like, oh, maybe this time. Maybe. Mm. Yeah.
Left her out to mind the house.
dear. Like, it's lucky that that guru guy is there, because the only guy worse than the dad is that guy.
And obviously this has been mirrored in Sapporo, where the zoo's closed, so they can't go to the zoo either, so they go skiing. Meanwhile, they go to the Sugao's family go to the Chinese restaurant, where they run into a couple of guys from the granddad's offices.
Well, where they run into everyone who Ishibe knows, essentially.
The sneaky one has a plan to try and get a trip on the is it the Goma-chan Mark II or something?
It's the company jet.
Yes, yeah, the company jet. So they swing that, but then also Granddad seems to also have a plan. He's got a sly look on his face, but that's not revealed in this episode as to what that
some sort of
is.
Double blind thing going on. Yeah.
So they're heading there, and then ends with the dad telling Ishibe that he's got something to tell him.
To be continued, two-part episode.
Well, this is technically two-part two is followed on from last week. Because they're doing all this because they saw that it ties into the sign to the zoo at the ski, at the ice skating, rather.
Oh.
Yeah. That was the kind of the impetus for this,
It's all connected. Yeah, I was like, is it ending? Are they gonna give Goma-chan up? Is he going to see Sugao? Swervers again.
I'm gonna say, you know, probably you're proven completely wrong. But Granddad's plan: buy the zoo, can hang on Goma-chan whenever you want.
Yes, that says.
Well, also to fuck over his employees as well. I assume you're now zookeepers. Deal with it.
We're getting out of whatever we're involved with. I don't know what it was last time. Last thing we bought ice rink, and we're getting out of that business.
We're out of the ice rink and iguana farm fucking business. We're just that's done. We're a zoo now.
We're a braided company.
Yeah. I forgot.
I think last year I quit the Penguin, you know, now that whole thing blew up. I mean, this thing is a gold mine. We gotta go with this, don't we?
Are these episodes coming at this time because of the Winter Olympics as well?
Oh, yeah.
Ice skating, previous episode, skiing, this episode.
Could be.
It could be.
Trying to be on point, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, but at this point, it's like, what? Yeah, just being horrible.
Oh, that would give them time enough to put it off for the Olympics as well.
Is like,
they've kind of like eased you into the Olympics this time, as opposed to it's gone now, Summer Olympics.
Doesn't air next week. Just leaves you hanging and like for months. It's like, oh no.
Oh Jesus, that'd be killer.
opening ceremonies in 7 days from now.
Hmm.
So yeah, you could. Yeah, I think you might be onto something. That maybe next week is where the it wraps up for a little bit and then takes a hiatus.
Hmm.
Righty-ho, next up we got Michiri Neko, episode 5, Heavy Bass, It Gets You Excited, Vertical, Smooch, New Home, Wait a Minute. What happened in this episode based on those titles? Can we remember?
Oh, God. Can you remember? Yeah.
Can you guess at all, listeners? What might happen?
Heavy bass, it was the band playing.
Yeah.
And the guys who play the big bass drums, they were playing it very heavily.
To the point where it was shaking everyone else up, yeah.
Yes. Ah, yes. It Gets You Excited was more shaking.
It was the maracas.
It was the guys with the maracas.
And they don't like the sound of maracas? Is that like a cat thing? I don't know.
You know, to get this kind of stamina, I think.
What happened in the middle episodes?
Vertical, I remember, because it was the first bit of body horror. The guy goes in to pick up the cat, and it's that fucking cat that stretches in the middle, and he's like, now put me back. And I was just like, oh, it's so gross.
But what was it?
I don't know how.
And then Smooch, is that the one with the milk
bottle
in the milk? Yeah, in the
I was visibly recoiling at that bit because I was like, he's gonna drink a cat, isn't he? And it's like, it wasn't that bad, but yeah,
the cat's gonna drink him. This tall drink of water right in front of her.
Now, what was New Home?
I think the cat gets named. It doesn't matter.
New Home. Oh, the family of cat is settling down to a lovely meal. But then. The crane comes down and takes the batter away.
That was it, yes.
And the wait a minute is again the crane game. He gets. Did he take out the guy with the duck on his head? I can't remember.
No, it's just one of these. He then says, I've lost a contact lens, and climbs back into the machine.
Yeah.
Let me just go take care of that.
I like the first one, the guy operating the machine. This machine's making a lot of noise. It's all these cats panicking like, and meowing.
That their dad has been robbed. Yeah. Good stuff.
You think twice next time you go to the arcade out on a date. And
thinking, breaking up families, man.
Yeah. Try and win something for your date, you know, try and seal that relationship and just destroying one in the act of doing so. Makes you think twice, doesn't it?
It does. I'm glad we could figure it out from the titles what happened.
They're short enough, at least.
I think this was a particularly good. I like the ones with the crane machine and the weird cat inside the milk bottle kissing people.
Maybe there's a game in that where you just give the episode titles of a Michiri Neko episode and just try and discern blindly what happened.
What happened in the fourth moment in Kokoku, Dwayne, if you watched it? I should have checked.
I did. Am I the only one watching this?
Cause I think you're the only one watching this at the moment, yeah.
If you like it, then yeah.
I could just stop talking about it on this.
No,
I need an excuse to talk about Psyche K. So.
Well, I don't mind. I'm trying to remember what the hell happened, except that the end... Oh, it's revealed that the granddaughter... I wish I could remember any character's name.
Jury.
That Jury has been in the stopped time world before with her grandpa. Apparently he took her there when she was a little kid because her dog was dying.
Yeah.
So it would be like, it was giving her time enough to deal with the dog dying. And he's like, okay, I'm just going to leave you in stop time forever. She's like, okay, bye. And he's like, bye-bye. You never see grandpa again. She's like, bye. And he's like, okay, fine. Listen, you just need to get over your dog dying kind of shit talking to her.
Yeah, they hinted that in like, the first episode. They showed a little flashback of them doing it when she was younger.
There's still, like, any... She partially pushed the jellyfish out of her grandpa, and he was like, oh, shit, I better pull this shit back in, otherwise my granddaughter's going to be trapped in stop time for the rest of her life. That would suck. And it's kind of them, like, in the present, it's a lot of them going around and wrecking those motherfuckers who... who were chasing them in the last episode. I did like her kind of opening thing of throwing the rock at one of the guy's faces. And obviously it stops in midair because, you know, it goes so far before it becomes stopped time. And then she just starts punching the jellyfish out of everyone. That was pretty sweet. They're still suggesting something with the black-haired one, that she knows Jury and she's been in the stop time before, and it's not making clear like that. And she's like, there's something about that one. She doesn't seem like the ruffian type or something like that. And I'm just like, I don't know, dude. She's hanging out with them. But and then what was the other bit? They're talking to one guy and he's like, oh man, we should just fucking leave this and go back to like the regular world. And he's like, well, we can't until we get the fucking stones back, and they're the only guys who can actually initiate it. And he's like, what? So we're trapped here? It's like, it's grand, dude. Everyone's cooking dinner around this time, so there's like infinite food for us. We'll be fine. And he starts freaking out and he threatens to kill one of the stopped guys, and that weird monster shows up again. Like it's small enough to fit in the room, squishes his head and then collapses. And it's like a pile of dust that the black-haired woman digs through and was looking for someone specifically, but she finds a different person's mummified head and lungs, that she's like, nope, this isn't the person I thought it was. So
lungs? That's actually
yeah, it's very good. It looks like there's just a couple of organs hanging off the head. It's kind of weird. And so she's like, oh yeah, like I know someone who's turned into one of these before, even though in the doctrine of this religion there's only ever one herald, they call them. And I was like, there's all these fucking weird rules, and I'm trying to like figure it out and stuff, but it's kind of leaving you hanging, and I'm still enjoying it. It's still fun. It was nice to see Jury and her grandpa team up, and just like he would teleport behind someone and grab him, and then she like punched the fucking jellyfish out. That was sweet. There's some good stuff in it.
I will eventually watch it, I think. It's just finding the time.
Yeah, of course.
I'm watching episode 3 of Disastrous Life of Psyche K, still through means untoward. Though, last time I looked, there was still a mystery thing on the lineup page for Crunchyroll, ? Maybe they're still haggling out the details. Yeah, still there. There's still a ? I think it's on Netflix in Japan, and that might be the reason why it's not available elsewhere. So, 5 stories again, as always. This time we've got Midwinter Disaster, in which they go to school and the heating's off, and because the heating was broken yesterday, you can't reverse time a day to fix it. But it wasn't cold yesterday, and so he's like, he's wondering why everyone else just doesn't go home, because it's no one can be expected to work in these conditions. But they've got a visit from one of their famous alumnus, a comedian named Peanut Sueda, who helped.
That's a fantastic name.
Yes. Eventually, Psyche manages to sort it out without giving away that he's got psychic powers. And also, Peanut Sueda is very helpful when he finally shows up. He's like a very responsible middle-aged man. And then he comes to do his talk, and then he's just like going, nuts, nuts, nuts. That just appears to be his act. He's just saying
that's his
nuts
bit
over and over again.
So it's like the, what was that character's name? George Doors with the peanut song?
Oh, yes, yeah. very close to that.
Okay.
So it's a bit weird that he was, they waited 5 periods through the entire day in order to go and see this. Then you got the Psycho conglomerate home visit. So Psycho is he's the Mendow of the show. He's the ultra super rich kid who's going to a normal school. But unfortunately he wasn't in today because he was in Dubai. So can you go around his house on the way home and drop off these notes for him? But when he gets there, he also goes with the Chuni and the ugly guy and the former hooligan delinquent. They all hang along as well, otherwise he'd just teleported them there. But when he goes, Psycho is already back because he just flew back from Dubai this afternoon. And so then he uses that opportunity to show them round the grounds and house in order to make them feel like peasants. But none of them are impressed, except for Psyche. Psyche is actually impressed with all this expensive stuff that he's got around the house. But because Psyche never says anything, He has no way of knowing, whereas all the other ones are really rude to him and all the rich things he's got. So he's got loads of statues, and the Tuny one goes, oh, they don't come alive when you walk past them. I'm not interested in that. Which then leads, leads to part three. Come on over to Psycho Land. So he's like, right, I'll show you guys. Just give me a couple of days. But then he invites them all back around again. And this time he's completely renovated the house with things that he's researched that they all like. So he's got like a science fiction automatic door to get in. The statues now do come alive. all the latest arcade and retro games. So as you can press, there's motorcycles that you can even, you can tinker with, that you can adjust, make adjustments to them if you like. You won't be able to stay, they're like, oh, we'll only stay half an hour. He's, no, and he's like trying to trap them there. And they end up staying like till 10:30 in the evening. He even traps Psyche, because to leave the house, you're going to have to go through this corridor made of cakes. And Psyche's weakness is coffee-flavored cakes. And so they all end up staying there, and they go, and he goes, I showed you now. You really did like this house. And they go, well, it's very nice of you to do all this research into what we liked. You should come around our house one time. He's accidentally made friends with them rather than actually making them envious. And then he's wondering, then he begins wondering himself, like, why did I make go to all this effort for these people I don't like? And then they wonder where the big lug is, and he's been trapped inside the automatic door the entire day. He did not have a good time. Then there's invincible disaster prevention messages, where we learn that if when Psyche gets a headache, he can see into the future. And he sees that his two friends are going to die if they try to make a snowman. But he doesn't want to make a snowman with them, but he decides, oh, I can't let them die. I'll have to go and make a snowman with them. So they spend all... There's various points at which they could have died, and he saves them. And they build this great snowman, and then they're like, oh, you know what this is great? This weather's great for? Pretending that you're dying on a mountain. And it turns out all he saw was them pretending to die from on a mountain. Why this is a fun game they would play, I don't know. Apart from the fact that they're idiots. And then the final part was, congratulations on your graduation. And it was the graduation ceremony for the third years at the high school. They're the second years. And there's only been one third year we've seen before, who was a hooligan in the first season, who the teacher managed to, and Psyche managed to put on the right path. And, but so they, first of all, the Tuny does like a speech from the second years, wishing the third years good luck on their graduation. And he picks out one particular guy, who was the guy who gave him all these weird ideas of secret organizations and powers bound within his right hand. But of course, the third year has now put that all behind him and is trying to live a proper life and doesn't want anyone to know that he was this weirdo before. And so on his graduation, this all gets brought up again. And then the delinquent says goodbye, and he's barely recognizable from his character design in the first season. He looks completely different. Then they all sing the school song, which the show goes, well, you weren't expecting to find out the school song on the anime, were you? You were expecting to find that in the manga. So then everyone's graduated, and it's like, it's time for a new school year. And then they all go back into their class, and they're still in the second year because they're manga characters and they can never rage. They will never graduate the school. They'll never even get into the third year. And so presumably, if there are ever any more third years, they'll be completely different ones to the ones we've seen before. And they introduce a load of first years next episode. It plays a lot with the idea of the stasis of Shonen Jump strips, particularly high school strips, of how a lot of these high school strips, you're always in the second year.
Yeah.
Never get out of it.
Like a big Cromarty, someone else got to be held back a couple of years. Maybe we're all just getting held back because they keep going off on adventures and things, and then, oh, if I didn't pass half past a year, you got to get held back. Didn't do ordinary maths.
And then we've got Niall's thing that he watches that we don't, Violet Evergarden.
Yeah, I watched it. Well, I'm an episode behind it because I've been busy. But it's kind of fallen into something of a pattern. So Violet, or kind of very taciturn heroine here, she's trying to give a farewell stab to trying to be like the what's it called again? Auto Memory, the letter writing company, which they explain what that means, why it's called an auto memory doll. This is someone who write a letter for you. I think in this world, the guy who invented the typewriter invented it because his famous author wife lost use of her eyes and couldn't write properly anymore. So he made this kind of device, which was basically a typewriter, but it had like a doll attached to it. I don't know. I haven't got the reasoning why. And with that, she could kind of touch type and still be able to put books out. And from that day forward, anybody uses a typewriter for some kind of romantic reason like that is an auto memory doll. This is the name of your occupation. I thought it was some kind of nickname, but it's actually just a name and a job. So she's kind of Violet anyway. She's trying to get along in that, both in the company, and then she's also enrolled in a course we can kind of gain a certification that will, you know, an employer know what they're doing. You pass the course, you're like a top-notch typist here, so you'll be a much more valuable employee. And along the way, she's kind of meeting people, and they have some kind of problem. They usually encounter her, and are very kind of taken aback by her strange ways and her lack of ability to understand social cues. Again, whether that's due to the trauma she experienced, or why she was always that way, kind of semi-unclear right now. It's a little hard to discern. It's kind of just been going in that pattern for a little while now. Like one of the more, I guess, meek employees at the letter writing company gets yelled at by a customer because with the letter that she wrote was all wrong. It's all a contest and you're using strange words. I'm not going to pay for this. And Violet kind of stands up at him. That's being firm for him. The guy's pissed off, understandably, but what's-her-face respects her for doing that for her. And then it's kind of something that happens in the school where she's great technically on the course, but she obviously is a little short in, you know, the flowery language department, so she can't quite convey feelings properly that people are wanting to put in the letters, so she's not kind of doing well in that department. But she makes friends with one of the other classmates there who has this sad story of her brother who was injured in the war, or he was in the army, but he didn't see any action until like the last weeks of the war, and the war wasn't even like in their area, I said in the closing stages, and then all those times were safe, and then the one time her parents go away, boom, they would happen to go to a place that just gets hit by a blitz or something like that, and they lost their parents, and then they had each other. The brother was injured, and he fell into depression. He's an alcoholic now. He's starting fights outside bars, and she's having a shit time of it all together. But she wants to put it all in the letter and just like tell her brother that you've been through some hard times, and no matter what happens between them all, you're still my only brother, and I love you. And Violet kind of like listens to that, and then puts that in the letter, and just writes in a few sentences in a very kind of curt, sort of matter of fact fashion, but in her own special way, because she kind of wrote it down. You know, things that were classic written, keep holding in all this time, just lays them all out there. And that brings his brother and his sister back together again. And they can start repairing their lives. So while Violet is kind of the worst at writing letters, she's secretly the best at writing letters. And it's kind of, that's kind of the thread that seems to be kind of going on. I've watched the most recent one, which I should probably be in another two now at time of recording that I haven't taken in yet. But there's still, I guess, time for it to maybe go up off into something else. Get kind of little snippets here and there of Violet's past with the now deceased kind of commanding officer. How they came to meet. I think the commanding officer of his brother was some kind of fucking highfalutin rich guy, and he goes to visit his brother. They're not really on good terms, and it's like, yeah, whatever. And you're in the army now. I'm a rich guy. You know, we're from two different worlds. But I got you a present. If you go into the spare room there, I got a lady there in the wardrobe. Maybe you can get her a job in the army or something. It's like she's just there in the cupboard in a sack. And he just goes in. It's like, if I bought you a girl, do what you want with her. I don't know what the context for that was. Is like that kind of thing a regular turn of events in this world? Again, not quite clear. We're kind of focusing more on Violet and her kind of strange things. It remains to be seen. We'll probably want to get the kind of cathartic outpouring of emotion at the very, very end of the series, because there's going glimmers of it there in the flashbacks, because you can't give away all at once. So narratively, it may not be as elaborate as his visuals, which are still amazing, and maybe I think are the main draw for this particular program, especially that during a lot of scenes at night, not always in the office, but maybe out in the streets as well, and then they have this lovely kind of effect with the reds and the oranges now to some of the kind of like the gas lights to have out in the streets and still the lamps to have in the offices, you know, reflecting off the lovely like mahogany desks and things. It's very kind of lovely kind of warming effect, which I'm a big fan of. It's my, I guess, aesthetic if you want to go for that kind of thing. I think like maybe general consensus is that this does look impressive, but it may not be able to back it up in the story department, which may not be a fault of the production here. It could be just something that's just inherent to the material it's adapting. It's from a book, isn't it?
It is. Isn't it the Kyoto Animation had like a light novel contest?
That's the one, yeah.
Mm.
And that was... I think, haven't they done it some years when nothing won? That one, this, I think.
Oh boy.
Jesus.
Yeah. I think there are some like interesting ideas in here, but it does seem to kind of circle back to these same couple of themes it looks kind of hammering on. And it's like, I don't know, you just got there some things there that could really help elaborate on and really kind of... when we draw us into this world and the people who live in it. I mean, I know Violet is kind of the way she is, you know, she's been through something that's really just kind of caused her to kind of default to this emotional state, but you gotta give us a little something more to really endear you to her. Because it's very hard to empathize with her. You can empathize with her some, but it's like, yeah, I kind of get what you're all about. You know, I see where this is going. You've got to eventually, you know, through meeting people, learn how to write down your feelings in a letter, and then maybe you'll finally come out of shock or whatever it is that you're in right now and realize that your CEO is dead and you had to come to terms with that. And even though everyone is very obviously tiptoeing around the issue, even though it's so obvious that he's dead, he's super dead, and he's not coming back, but we can't break it to you right now. This needs something until we get to that point. It wants a little bit more just to chew on, because that's still going to be a few episodes away before we can get the kind of emotional catharsis. Just little bits like that. I mean, some details I do kind of like. As mentioned, like Violet is really good at the old typing, you know, doing technical aspects of it. She's good at just typing up like kind of reports and menus and kind of little memos and things like that. But she just kind of asks, okay, how many words do you want, and how fast do you need to get done by? I need it done. It's this long. I need it by this time today. Okay. And she kind of like roll up her sleeves and kind of adjust some of the cranks and the kind of dials and the kind of gearage on her prosthetic limbs, and then actually she'll just be able to kind of type pretty much automatically or just very, very quickly then depending on whatever was specified. So that's a nice kind of little detail.
So like a quick thing, like she doesn't write literally like transcribe what you're saying. It's like, I need you to get my intent out that I haven't fucking written into words properly. That kind of way?
That's what the job is supposed to be about. You know, you'll write things for like, you know.
So it's nearly like a letter biographer or something like that. Yeah? That someone else is to tell what you want to say, that kind of thing.
It's all right, that thing, you know, I did the starting point is like, no, this is for, you know, a service for people who maybe can't read or write to, you know, have it written, but it's also used a lot for basically writing love letters or fun kind of very
letters with meaning, yeah,
very affectionate things to your family, your friends, or would be paramours and things like that. But obviously, Violet, you know, being the basic like human robot that she doesn't know how to write that way. She just does it all very verbatim, very militarily styled, you know, this a very very kind of blunt language stuff. So like some of the meaning can be lost and actually come across the entirely opposite way. She's got to learn how to figure out how to not do that. But again, as mentioned, in her own way, maybe she's the only one who can just speak the truth of what you're really trying to get out there, man. Just give it to you, Nick.
She cuts out the
nice
bullshit.
Concise sentences. Yeah. So I kind of feel she probably won't learn anything at all. This is just going to be a way, actually, maybe we should always do like Violet's way now. Maybe she's just the one to do this. So she probably get all the letters now that involve like breaking bad news to people. And then maybe through doing that, she'll break her own bad news to herself. I don't know. But yeah, it's still damn pretty to look at. So. Maybe that's enough for me. Maybe I am kind of as shallow as that I'll just tune in for the lovely visuals, and maybe that will be what can bring me back like week after week. But it's obviously it didn't, because I'm behind on this. But like I said, I've been busy. God, move house.
Next up, we've got episode 16 of Michiko and Hatchet. No, sorry, Garo Vanishing Line. Chance meeting.
I had the exact same thought. I mean, just the fact as well, like it could be any town, but the fact they've gone one is obviously kind of emulating Central or Southern America. It's like, oh, yeah, this is just Michiko and Hatchet. They've even got the big bike.
So this is an episode of Garo with no horrors in it, which, as we've discussed, is it's awfully lot like Michiko and Hatchet once you take the horrors out of it.
Yeah, I thought at local crime boss is obviously he holds sway over Dom because he's aligned with the horrors. No, he's just some dude.
I thought it was like the young guy was going to turn into a horror because of his thirst for vengeance that his girlfriend and that kind of shit. And I was just like, yeah, that makes sense. Because I think they used a similar musical thing that I've seen people turn to horrors to with him, like being so enraged and everything.
Well, maybe that's what Sora realized, that they got, no. I've seen this all happen a million times before, and no, I didn't step in before, and I gotta step in now. Maybe I can save a life for once.
Don't leave fucking chaos in your way. Yeah.
Also, it allows them to have flashbacks to his youth.
Yeah, and the similar kind of story.
Yeah. So it's Sword and I forget the girl's name.
Sophie
have an argument after he eats her chocolates.
Yeah, he eats her special chocolate that she got, and she's being a big kid about it, but he's kind of being a big kid about it as well, so yeah.
So I'm sorry, it's not the point.
They've come to the
I'm
seaside.
I'm still chocolateless.
And unfortunately the seaside is covered in filth, it turns out. And so while he's sulking, he runs into this kid who's trying to he's being chased down by some gangsters because he apparently tried to kill their boss, and we get his backstory about how this guy runs things in this town, and he basically seems to turn any attractive women into his prostitutes, and they murdered this guy's girlfriend. And that's why he wants to get revenge, and Sora's trying to talk him out of it, saying she'd want you to live. And then we get a flashback about his sister and how that she would want Sword to live.
Yeah. Like, you got to enjoy life even when it's tough. Otherwise, that doesn't make life worth living.
Yeah, he's a pretty good speech in it of, it's if I die, then who's going to remember her? Yes. So I decided to stay alive. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like, I'm trying to make the world better because she made my life better, that kind of way.
Doesn't work. Sort of
no.
Sword has to get intervened and punch bullets.
I love when he fucking punches that bullet and everyone just like, oh, shit. And they all just fucking
no way. Like, we've all got guns, but we're not going to try that against that dude.
Punch the bullet back at me. I'm fucking out of here. You know, it's like, done. Yeah. that was pretty sweet.
But yeah, doing all this unfortunately broke the chocolate that he'd bought to replace the one he'd eaten. But that's okay, because there's now three pieces to share. Of which Sword gets the biggest bit, because...
Well, he's the biggest.
He is the biggest.
I did like the way that initially, what's her name? I was going to say freaking Fujiko.
Gina.
I did like the way Gina was initially like, oh, well, I'll split it up and meet again later. And obviously she straight away like veers in on her, on Sophie. We were just like, let's stick together. This town's super fucking sketchy. So she just has a nice, herself and Gina just have a nice day. Where Sword is mostly dealing with the emotional traumas and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yeah, promises of boobs, and they're not as exciting as he was expecting.
He's still thankful.
Still thankful, you know, because, like, it's, the guy can pay respect to them, you know, they're very venerable, so if anything, they require more respect.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's the little thing I like is when your man is getting chased by a thug and Sword is going to follow him and can't intervene. And the guy cornered in the alley, and then Sword fills the frame, like 8 feet tall, 5 feet wide. And it's like these two dudes are scared shit of his phone. Who's this massive guy? He's just staring down his nose at him. And then you kind of eyes looking to one side, and then they follow his gaze, and then they look back and he's fucking gone. It's like, wow, for a big guy, you can move.
I did like that. The thing of like, I'm here to fuck you up. Just messing, you know, like he the entire presence of him had them stopped in their tracks. Presence, just the way he could misdirect them. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like to see this little side of Sword as well. Getting a kind of few details filled in from his past, and as well maybe trying to resolve a situation that doesn't involve somebody getting brutally murdered and, you know, being, I guess, not as bad as it could be, but still pretty bad.
And despite it being a guy who's, like, put all his stats into strength and dexterity, he manages to, like, not get in any violence, kind of. You know, just keeps out of it for himself, at least.
Yeah, I know. Again, just, like, just using the... It was kind of conveying an aura.
Yeah.
Is enough. These are small time guys. You know, they've never seen a man this big before.
If he punched one of these guys, they'd be just pulp. Yeah, it would be a remarkably bad idea.
Yeah, I don't know if they. I looked on Anime News Network and did a comparison. Didn't seem to be any crossover with Michiko and Hanshin staff. So.
Oh no! Like direct, yeah.
No, okay. But just a happy coincidence. It was the point at which they went into the bar, and
okay,
that was the point. Where it was like, oh, this is feeling a lot like Michiko and Hanshin. And then by the end, I say, with no horrors have shown up for the entire episode. It's like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's fine doing that. It was just a little weird because the tone was pretty much exactly like some of those Michiko and Hanshin episodes, which don't really. Which is just them dealing with them being in this place.
A specific problem, yeah.
Here's a problem in this place. Let's get through it and get to the end of the episode. And next up is Working Buddies, Episode 5, High-Rise Window Washing Buddies. In which they're window washing in a high-rise. And the... Persian blue? Is he Russian blue? Russian blue, isn't he?
Russian blue. Yeah.
It's a cat from JoJo.
Which cat from JoJo?
The cat that got turned into a flower that shoots air bubbles.
Was that Russian blue? Oh.
Yes. Well, it was.
I mostly remember the weird flower monster, you know. Unsurprisingly, yeah, I suppose.
He does not like heights.
As long as he convinces himself not to look down and not think about it, which is difficult because your man keeps shaking it.
Yes, whereas Tapio, the tabby, he seems to be loving it. He's very excited.
Yeah, that's his constant state of being, though. So.
Well, maybe the lesson is, though, he's trying to like take his mind off it by kind of just verbalizing it. And because the lesson is that the more you focus on something, the more it draws your attention to it. Or the more you get told not to or not to do something, the more you then focus on that fact. And then this makes things worse for you.
Yeah, I thought the creature that will not be named was veering into like solipsism. It's like you create the reality by thinking about it kind of thing. But so don't think about looking down is his thing. But their supervisor is just saying, it's like, yeah, just wash the windows. Don't be looking in. don't be doing anything other than washing. Like.
Yeah, don't look in. Because
that's their private life, man.
They won't enjoy that. They had like the, I think it was like they were working on a loom and they kind of put out.
Yeah, there was a crane working on
a
loom.
It's the reference to the crane's return of a favor story.
Yeah.
Please don't ever look in the room.
Yeah, don't be the phone looking at them. But all you can't help but though is you want to see all the little kind of weird animals working in the office here. I'm trying to figure out like what the cockatoo lady was at, because she's trying to work a keyboard or a computer with her wings. It's like, what am I doing with this thing?
Yeah, not a seal this time returning the favor.
Well, hang on to next week. You never know what the next supervisor of the job will be.
I did like the animal that cannot be named having the little flower in his ear. Just sitting back.
Oh, he was just chilling. Yeah,
chilling,
yeah.
Enjoying a drink.
Don't look in here.
What did I say? No, stop trying to get me.
That's checking in with our working buddy friends. Now let's check in with our other animal friends at Bono Bono, where they go in to investigate episode 45, A Big Noise.
Whoa.
They hear a big noise. They go to investigate and meet what the description said was a squirrel with a scar on his face.
I thought he was another chipmunk.
That's what I thought as well.
That's the same.
But the description did say a squirrel. Maybe. Did you write the description, Dwayne?
No.
You're always calling him a squirrel.
I'm beginning to think now that he's a fucking squirrel named Chipmunk just to fucking confuse me.
I think they have shown a squirrel before.
Okay.
And I think he looked different to this guy. Anyway, this guy has got a scar on his face and he won't let them pass to find out where the noise came from. He tells them at first that it was his dad farting.
And I love the way the lads are just satisfied with that because it's really funny.
Oh, we're not going to do it. Raccoon is like, no, if you want to do this. And then Bonner's like, no, easy, buddy. He isn't worth it. Just go, come on. Play it cool. Okay, let's walk away right now. And then we'll go back. You're probably going to be gone, okay? It's fine.
Raccoon the entire time is like, it's not going to work. Like, you can see it on his face. He does not believe this plan of Bonner's.
Oh, he's still here. Shit. Of course he's still here.
dear. So they convince him that it's like, we only want to find out what the noise was. It's just curiosity. We're not going to do anything. Like, you promise you're not going to do anything? All right, I'll show you then. And he takes them to like a big open field where they're expecting like a crater or what was it? A pile of fruit.
A mysterious sign. I'm sorry, father.
A mysterious sign is like, what's the context of this sign? Yeah.
This kind of like parallel narrative running along with chipmunks. It's happened before, but like, you know, you're going about town, and you got to be climbing the trees and picking the leaves. You know, you stumble in on a family drama. You go home and have a nap, and then well, hang on, go back a few steps. What was that?
What was that very interesting piece there? But what was the thing called? It was the noise bug or something.
The noise bug is the explanation that he gives. Laying its eggs.
The noise bug laying its eggs, yeah. And I thought they were extinct because when they lay their eggs, they make a big noise and everyone comes and like captures them as a souvenir and stuff. So it's been the first time in years he's heard one of them laying their eggs.
Now, it should be mentioned that the sound sounds a lot like a shotgun. Which is further backs up the evidence with the last shot is this noise going off again and a load of birds flying out the trees.
Yeah, I think that happens every time the noise goes though, isn't it?
So I don't know whether this squirrel is telling them another lie to keep them safe from where
Or this is
are.
What he thinks it is, or is this true?
Yeah, or the yes.
It sounds like bullshit.
It's a weird forest. It's got that fucking giant rock in a tree.
That's true.
It has that place where you put things get holes in them.
Yeah, there's some weird shit going on in this place. A part of the forest is full of single dads. Like, it's weird. dear.
Yes, I couldn't quite tell what the squirrel's deal was. How did he get that scar?
I feel like he was being sincere. Yeah,
because
he's cool.
Maybe he's trying to protect them from whatever gave him that scar.
Yeah. A gun.
Yeah, I feel like there's something deeper here, but it's impossible to actually figure out exactly what it would be.
Yeah. Well, Bono is known for that, because they have had very profound statements made on a lot of different things. But as well, they have a lot of just kind of bullshit things that is kind of funny and weird. So it's hard to figure out which this is. It lies somewhere in between, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you it's like you'll see a silhouette of what the truth is, but you can't quite discern exactly what it is.
What they're doing to us here. They're telling us some kind of bullshit lie and trying to convey some kind of truth to us. Just had the squirrel with. Oh no, we've been played.
Right, next up, you're going to give me a bit of a hand on this because I didn't quite catch all of it. Classicoid episode 18, Goodbye, Big Sister. In which this was one of the better looking episodes, I would say, of the season.
Well, the plot's coming up, but it's, again, going nowhere.
I did check it. This one had got... it was the director doing the storyboard as well, which might have helped.
Oh,
okay.
And at least in the first half, I didn't quite catch all of the second half. I got the gist of it, but... The first half is a lot of...
Mozart's writing his own fan fiction.
Wagner writing his own fan fiction.
Sorry, why do I keep doing that? Jesus, I'm the worst with names, dude. he's writing his own fan fiction, and you initially think it's like, oh, maybe they're actually fucking being nice for once, and then they start like being a bit too nice.
And then the dad shows up, and that's the thing.
When the dad shows up and is nice, I'm just like, oh, this is bullshit.
Wagner, I love you.
You are my greatest creation. My beloved son. And each time he redoes that fucking fan fiction, it becomes more and more. It's like, yes, you are the one octave.
Yes, that doesn't make any sense as a term, but you are. Tchaikovsky baked you a cake.
Dear.
But basically they're not noticing his career, and so...
But everything his sister does in the fantasy, she comes back and says, oh, we're so happy to see you come back. Like, I'm really delighted that you took time out of your busy day to come see us. And things like where she's like, oh, we're so proud of you that you're doing so well. She's genuinely proud of him, but he just wants the attention of every other motherfucker in that mansion. But who cares about them? They're all assholes.
Just these guys. Yeah, I just want to show them up and say, see how much better I am than you. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they're all playing Mario Kart.
Even the hippo.
He's actually quite good.
Really? he's playing as Wario, so it's a pretty good character.
Yeah.
he just increases the marketing plus them when they get so too over and saying, you, it's 3 a.m. I don't care. Man, we're doing this fun. I want to roll out everything we got. Yeah. Marketing, merchandising, blitz, get everything out in the streets, and this goes.
Like, when he later goes back, like they're playing like his version of Mario Kart that has been just released, and they're still not paying attention to him.
I like it. This guy zooms out and he's getting all the more ridiculous things, and then it's like, 7-day like location tours across Japan that are related to Wagner in some tenuous fashion.
Yeah. The fashion line, all that kind of thing.
Yes. Sosuke's come up with this indie toku satsu character. Music man.
Yeah. And he keeps just trying to riff on your man's thing. He's like, oh, wow, he's really popular now because his face is on the front of this curry packet. And he's like, hey, I could be on the front of a curry packet.
He's called Music Man, and get this, his catchphrase is Music Man.
He's got a pose.
I tell you, remember his name.
My favorite bit is when he orders the henchmen to break into the house and...
Yeah, like, wait, the one where they forcibly bring them to the concert, or where they force all his merchandise on them?
Where they force all the merchandise into the house, yeah.
Like, friggin' Schubert hasn't even noticed that he's changed his clothes after his bath into that fucking ridiculous stage costume, yeah.
I didn't even notice you just kind of put on your pants and your top at the same time.
All of a sudden it was Lycra, yeah.
Did not realize that, I didn't notice this. There's like a step missing here. What's happening?
It was a very nice bath. He didn't really notice the clothes after the fact.
Probably busy thinking of Beethoven.
That's true as well, yeah.
I'd say next episode with him paired with Mozart does look like a good combination for comedy.
It's a good odd couple, yeah.
So what happens how does he get to the concert and the fight?
He kidnaps them with his goons again. Sosuke Kane
went to the toilet before he came, so
Sosuke was going to the toilet. The three of them were going to go to the concert because they care. And then he forcibly kidnaps everyone in the mansion, including the people who were going to go, except for Sosuke, who was in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And they're at the suspended concert. In a cage above the concert, which is going to be broadcast everywhere on planet Earth, just so you know how fucking big he is. He's got a new thing, and it's actually a music piece. And they're all like, he's got music. Oh, it's going out of control because his freaking Valkyries and guys on Pegasi flying around turn into guys hitting you with sausages. Must be some kind of pun.
Cutlery, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they all break out and everyone has a freaking cacophony of all the musics at once.
Yeah.
But the concert went really well, I guess, because that's a pretty impressive stage show. Bending reality to your will, I suppose, yeah.
And then the mum decides that she's got to go and find her husband. Because clearly that is the root of all of Wagner's problems, is his...
daddy issues, yeah.
Yes.
Because he's kind of mother loves him. His sister definitely cares about him. And it's just like, dude, give up on the dad. He's a prick.
Yeah, but it's not good enough. It's like, I don't care if you love me. You either all going to love me or not. Oh, that's it. So I don't need you anymore. So just go home. Get the fuck out of here. I don't care. I haven't got a sister. You're no sister of mine.
He absolutely denounces her. And I was like, oh, come on, dude.
Well, twerp, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, the doc is out there somewhere. And Bach is also probably close by because you see him in the background there with his holiday clothes on, looking for something. The hotel looks like.
Hmm.
Good, good. Next up, Pop Team Epic, Episode 5. We start with what was supposed to be a Steamboat Willie parody, but it was immediately pulled.
Yes.
And then we got a
parody. Okay, I was wondering what actually was supposed to be in there, and I assume that wasn't a joke, that something, something's been pulled. And it's like, no, we can't.
Well, his additional joke is that it is a parody of when the last episode of School Days was pulled, and they played a video of a boat.
They replaced their pull parody with another parody of something getting pulled.
That is correct, yes.
Nesting parodies.
Wow. That is how deep this goes. That's almost 10 years old at this point.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't think this thing cares what it's referencing or when that thing is from.
Oh, that is true, because I did not get the very last reference at all until I saw someone pointed it. Well, there's other ones I didn't get at all, but that one.
Okay.
Until other people pointed it out. So next up, we've got Imoyoba, which is a abbreviation for "Don't Call Me Little Sis." Somehow, and this is another Space Neko Company one, and this is a shoujo manga parody of where
it's all a particular one actually, because I have heard this exact same plot line.
I feel like I've heard this in many different things.
It's not quite Marmalade Boys, but it's close not to Marmalade quite. Boys.
No, it was something that was like Marmalade Boy, but it's not. I have heard this scenario play out definitely.
Yeah, I didn't get time to properly watch High Dive, so I don't know if they pointed out exactly which one it was. But the scenario is that parents have remarried, and the hot boy who she thought could be her boyfriend potentially is now her brother. Oh no.
Ooh.
But the main parody is that her parents are the fucking two.
Yes.
And they're just awful.
There's also Matt swinging it up. He was heading down drinking, heading down to the gambling hall, just blowing all the money and the rent.
Doing puppet shows at night.
Yep.
Doing Gundam maneuvers.
Like, trying to shoot a gun.
You mean
a
Gundam movement dances?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's how you do it.
It's Yuko Bayashi as Pee Me in the first half, and Yoko. That was last week's. Tomoko Kaneda.
Oh, that's it. That's it.
Is Popoko in the first half of this? And I have to say, those two are my favourites so far because
Like, generally, I like the guy voices better because they're very different and they're playing it less straight. But these guys are fucking insane.
Yeah,
great.
You know, in a good way. I'm not dissing. Like, yeah.
Apparently,
like,
they're best friends. You can find all sorts of like clips from TV shows where they basically just send the pair of them out.
Okay, I couldn't find the link in their own careers, but so, you know.
I think the two guys are really good friends as well. That's the other. So
okay.
Oh well, they've been in things before.
Yes,
they're important drifters.
Connection. I wonder whether maybe the connection for every episode is entirely possible, but that everybody's
like one guy gets hired, and the other guy rings up his friend, is like, "Hey, there's another part in this. Do you want to have a laugh?" It's like, yeah.
But that
it's only one afternoon. It'll take no time at all.
Yeah, we only have to do half the episode. It's grand.
But they're changing the voices they're using within a single sketch. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. There's no consistency in that how they're having fun. Yeah.
But someone like Tomoko Kanada, she's got like a lot of range because you can go from fucking Chiyo-chan up to anything else. So you can really vary that within a sentence if you want to.
Yeah, have you seen clips now of her as herself? She's closer to Chiyo-chan. So it seems a bit like Maria Bamford, where she's always got a cartoony voice as her real voice, but then can turn that voice into a real voice. Into a human sounding voice if necessary.
I was kind of thinking of Stephanie Beatriz, you know, from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I think other things. I mean, if you're looking up, but like she, in that show, she's like, you know, very, very kind of deep voice, very serious now. But she often, for a disguise, will decide to do a very kind of cutesy girl voice, and it's really off putting, but she's very good at it.
Yeah, this had the bit with the puppet show and the Gundam walk, I think, might have been the jokes which made me laugh the loudest so far.
Mm.
And as well as the perform both of those, it is worth watching both segments of it then, because two sets of actors go different ways of it.
I did like the guys constantly talking over the other dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And it ends with them getting married after the boyfriend gets stabbed by her as he's trying to protect parents from being stabbed because they are terrible. And then we flash forward later and they've had twins, who of course are Pop Team Epic.
Yeah, that seems kind of like a horror story more so than a love story, but all right.
Then we get Winnie the Pooh's Home Run Derby arc by Makoto Yamashita, which again has had the footage pulled from the actual parody of Winnie the Pooh's Home Run.
Because you were saying that, and I was like, what? And obviously, yeah, I missed
But the rest of it is, it's not only is it a parody of that Flash Disney game, it's a parody of a Nico Video commentary on that Flash video game. The ones where they use the automated speech things at the bottom.
Mm.
It even has like the thing of sticking the heads at the end with the chroma key around it so you can cut them out and use them in your own things. Yeah, the depth of having to know exactly what they're parodying was too far. That was another one where I had no idea what they were parodying until I saw someone else link to the actual video.
Mm.
Like, then I was like, oh, now I sort of get it.
Yeah. Worth reading the comments and stuff for these episodes, because people are often more helpful than anything else. In between the, ooh, this is memes and anime, occasional grain of like actual knowledge.
Outside of that episode 25, I think, of Heybot, this is harder work than Heybot. At least for me.
Every week.
I think maybe people younger than me would find Heybot equally as hard. But
okay.
Then we got Pop Team Cooking by Kazuki Sekiguchi. I think that's a new name. Whether that's replacing the French guy.
Oh, yeah.
As being the extra guests.
Hmm.
Where they are sort of doing a cooking show, but not
They're
really
teaching you how to simmer.
Sort of, yes. And their side dish, boiled vegetables. Then we've got Bob Nimimimi, or whatever the Crunchyroll translation is.
Bob Epic Team.
That's it.
Which I, keep, which I keep saying is Bob Team Epic, but it's not. It's Bob What a Way Around.
Yeah. We learned from this week's Shonen Jump that Oda is a fan of these segments.
The guy's got good taste.
Yes. So this is about an owl who is very pushy about them going to an outlet mall.
Yeah, because they want to go on vacation or something.
Yes.
But he just wants owl feed.
Go to the outlet mall. It's got lots of shops there. One shop in particular. You can see where I'm going with this.
Then we've got some kamikaze doga ones. We've got doing the 3x table. Then we've got...
Oh, I'm guessing that was a pun that flew over my head as well, yeah.
And then we've got an Undertale reference, I'm led to understand by the internet, who played Undertale, where she's grows, so she grows when praised.
Oh, okay.
Not that you need to know the reference, because it's then what they do after that.
It's still very strange and amusing.
I think I preferred it like the second time round, where the guys are commenting, oh, it's just going to keep growing, is it?
I don't... producer's name...
We could put the credits here. Like,
I like the first one more actually, because it's just like going for one. Yes, ooh,
It was weird. It was weirding me out. That was the point. But yeah,
hiccups. If you hiccup 100 times, you'll die.
Mm. But the sherry. So she just self destructs.
Yes. Then we're back to. Bob Epic Team with I've written down what are you looking at? It's the guy with the glasses from the
They've met up in a field to go to the cinema, and there's some guy who's looking at them, but he's not looking at them, but they claim that he is.
Yes,
and that's it.
He keeps on lifting his glasses, and there's weird things behind them.
Weird things that show that he's not looking at them.
Yes. Then we've got Space Necker Company where. Pofuko is trying to do her Mickey impression, but it keeps
but it keeps swearing as well, right?
The impression.
I wasn't sure if there was just a bunch of swearing in there as well. It's hard to tell.
And then it ends with a different version of the ending theme, a Route 66 version, and then a parody of the Penn and Teller video game.
The desert
video game.
Yes.
Yeah, desert bus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
They keep having it for like do a charity thing where you got to drive a bus from like fucking Las Vegas to I don't know someplace else, Nevada, and it's just like you play it in real time.
Okay.
And you actually have to. You can't just put a brick on it or anything because the bus veers to the left a little. So they play it for charity thing and they see how far they can go back and forth.
Steering wheel then.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, you have to, like, have it just course correct every... It seems like a really... It's just an annoying fucking game, is basically the point of it.
Coming to a speedrun charity event near you, but hasn't already.
No, it definitely has, yeah.
When you look it up, you get lots of worst video game in history. Worst video game ever made.
That was the intention, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yes, of course, they'll parody it here.
Is it a bad game, or is this... I'm sure there have been much more offensive games, which are...
Really unfun, is basically the point of it.
Unfun is fine.
Yes.
Actively offensive would be a worse game.
There's been other worst game ever created things when that guy this week, was it... admitted that he was behind... Another
some terrible game
created, yes.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was, but he's going to tell his story. Now the time is right. He feels open about it.
Stop. I think it's basically just stop asking him about it. it was another good episode of Pop Team Epic, as I say. Perhaps my favourite voices on the first part so far.
It's hard to beat Cell and Frieza, though. I mean, that was...
That's pretty classic. Yeah.
Did anyone watch Cardcaptor Sakura this week?
Yes.
Just you now, then. I had no time.
Yeah, you didn't really miss much. Sakura's meeting the gang at the park for the flower viewing to bring him lunch. They do that. It's interrupted for about 5 minutes by a car. Just some kind of, it's like the pull gravity car. She's being pulled away by some unseen force. She takes care of that and goes back to meet the friends in the park. And then Starman comes around and he's brought some lovely peach buns. Everyone has the peach buns and everyone is also unhappy. How lovely.
So wait, is the plot like resolved? It sounds like the plot's resolved at the start and then the rest of the episode is just them hanging out and doing nice stuff.
The plot's resolved about 5 minutes in the middle of it. And
that's
then,
fucking class.
And then, okay, back to the picnic.
Oh, dear.
Any more commentary from the characters on how lovely the new transfer student is, or are they adjusted to her loveliness at this point?
Dude, they complimented her sandwiches.
Okay. Lovely sandwiches too.
He's like, you know, everyone had brought, you know, something like that. Like Stracker had like some rolled omelets and the everyone had kind of, you know, some little treats from like yakisoba, and Charvan has his peach buns. It's like, oh, I want a bunch of these sandwiches. Yeah, but they're good sandwiches though. So, you know, don't beat yourself up about everyone. It's they're really nice sandwiches. So they're very lovely, you could say.
What was Kara up to this week?
He spent his flower reviewing day at home with food, watching TV.
Doing it correctly. Yeah, I didn't watch this because I was busy watching an incredibly depressing episode of Kamen Rider Build. Boy, that series puts the main character through the ringer, something terrible. This week, he murdered a guy.
On purpose?
No. He was given a new power-up. He was told, he was being guilt-tripped by the villain, maybe, into using a new power-up to face Kamen Rider Grease, who's the Kamen Rider from the part of Japan, who is currently at war with the part of Japan Build lives in. He was like, I'll give you this, because this will save the other Kamen Rider's life, because if he carries on using the power the way he's going to kill himself. So you use this instead. So he uses that and then goes berserk and kills one of the henchmen of Grease. And then spends the rest of the episode feeling it just completely consumed by grief and guilt. Unfortunately, while this is happening, the leader of his country, who's now back to be... They've got rid of the bad guy in charge, and his dad's now back in charge. And so they come to an agreement with the leader of the other country to say, we'll stop the war because innocent people are getting killed. We'll just have a proxy battle. You put your Kamen Rider up against my Kamen Rider. And so they basically have to try and convince... Grease is the one who really convinces Build to actually take part, because he basically says, look, we're in a war. That guy, the guy you killed, he knew he was in a war. He knew what the risks were. So don't feel bad about killing him. But he was my friend, so I'm going to absolutely kick your ass in that fight.
Don't feel bad, but I am going to kill you.
I need you to fight me.
In war, there are no emotions except for revenge.
Yeah. And even that guy can't... even Grease can't remember his friends either. He's also got amnesia the same way Bill has. And this is only the... This is like the icing on this terrible cake that Build's gone through like the last 10 weeks of the series, where he's discovered that the evil organization that created him, he founded.
Oh, yeah.
My God.
Yes, he is actually the arch-villain behind all the plots. He just suffered from amnesia and was given a new face. And also the guy he thought was his best friend and whose house he was staying at is the guy who's manipulating everything, he's the guy who's put these two countries at war, basically, in order to power up the Kamen Riders in each country, for reasons we don't know yet.
Oh, man. It's a Total Recall.
I was thinking that as well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mars is involved.
Well, there you go.
Mars is involved. That's where the Pandora's box, where all this power came from. He was the guy who's manipulating everything was an astronaut who went to Mars, brought this box back. And then while it was being shown off to various officials in Japan, he did something to it which caused the country to get split and all the people there to have their personalities altered. So they became, evil, more ambitious, and they know that they've had their personalities altered as well. That's the thing. It's like they admit that they're not who they used to be, but because of the way they
but they're okay with it.
Yeah, they're okay with it because they've had their personalities altered.
Mm.
It's, I have to say, so far it is the best Kamen Rider show I've ever seen. Because it's got good, it's got decent actors. Like, I mean, X-Aid went through a whole load of stuff, but you couldn't quite buy it because the guy playing X-Aid is not that great an actor. Whereas the guy they got playing Build did a pretty good job of looking absolutely desperate throughout the entire episode. Good so stuff.
So vulnerable.
Next up, Ancient Magus' Bride, episode 17, Look Before You Leap, in which we've got some more Ashen Eyes being...
Is he like a trickster god, or is he just a bastard?
That's the thing. I was like, is he a trickster god? Is he like supposed to be... whereas you've got the Titania and Oberon are kind of representing mythological figures. He feels more like a fable or a fairy tale.
Yeah, yeah. Especially like because he's kind of got like a Middle Eastern flavor that he's like a moralistic kind of fucking tale, like a Thousand and One Nights kind of thing. Like the worst thing he does in this episode is upset some children by showing a brother and sister that they actually do care about each other. Like that's his end game, it seems. But it's like, or were you actually up to shit and you went, oh, fuck it, I'm done.
They have to do it in this precise fashion.
Yeah, I feel like there's a nicer way you could do that. dear.
So yeah, he causes the everyone to forget that the little brother of the girl we saw in the previous episode at the Paddington station exists. And so his sister is desperately trying to find him and his parents don't remember he existed. And so drags Elias and Chisei into this.
I do like the way they set it up that they were visiting their grandmother who lives in the country. So there's not where the parents would be like, huh, whose bedroom was this with all these boys' toys in it? That kind of thing, you know?
So yes.
There was no reason for there to be evidence there as well. Yeah.
But I think the actual key part of the story is the idea of these fairy creatures requiring payment. Because Elias requires payment from the girl to do it.
And he talks through Cheese and I'm like, that's super creepy, dude. Don't. It's like, what are you going to give me?
Yeah, don't do that. That's not really nice.
Well, he probably didn't want to appear as a skull monster and then go like, give me something, you know, because that would probably freak her out even more than Cheese saying it.
And then we get that sort of hag creature needing blood and the other ones wanting the crystal flowers which grew.
Out of her teddy, yeah. The whole episode as well is Chisei, your magic is turned off. Remember, we put it into these magic flowers and you're wearing a bracelet that means you can't do magic.
Yeah.
And it's no fucking magic. Don't be doing magic. Obviously magic saves the day, but
but was it her
kind of magic?
Was it her magic or was it?
It was the magic of the pelt or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like she feels as well that, well, people don't want to give me bracelets to help me, so I won't dive into much magic, and they're giving me a teddy that absorbs excess magic, and so everyone's kind of helping me out, and I kind of feel like if I can't do magic as well to help them out, but that's kind of paying back, I don't feel I'm doing right by them. But she finds other ways then to come through and assist people, whereas, you know, whether it be kind of offering her blood to that creature, or whether it be kind of, well, I can't use magic, but I can put that thing on, and then I can kind of turn into a magical thing and find stuff, and then I still be able to help these two kids get back together with their family.
Yeah, and just because Elias does require payment, the fact that your one goes like, I can make you sweets every time I come back here, and it's like, that counts.
A pact is made.
yeah.
I felt as well, I misread it slightly, but I thought I was going to like ask for payment, because the rules were also as well, because they were unsure about what this whole story was about, to make sure that she was being serious about it, because she wasn't a kind of telling some kind of fib or kind of or anything else about. Whereas if she says she'll do anything to get her brother back, then we know that she's the real deal, so we can follow this trail.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's also to kind of give an idea that Elias isn't so much more human than some of these monsters are.
Yeah, he's a lot kind of closer to them, but
yeah, particularly
after... in the end, like he turns into like a white haired version of Chise. Yes. Like, and it's kind of like him going like, I do not get this human shit.
Mm-hmm. Particularly after Ash and I's still demands payment after all of this.
Yeah.
And that I couldn't quite figure out what that look at the end that Chise's given. Is it not having her brother? Is it something about Elias?
Is it something about realizing that Elias isn't far off these other monsters you've been dealing with all day?
Well, it was well there about like Elias is talking to Tom about the young lad about family as a concept essentially, and it's like, well, family it's not necessarily by blood, but it can be just people who kind of are together and close knit and care for one another and mind each other.
And himself and his sister get that by the end. They're just like, obviously, you fucking really piss me off at times as only a sibling can, but it's like you're still like family, there's a deeper connection there.
Yeah, so I wonder if there's something there where, like, she says she's lost one family. She's trying to have, I guess, kind of one is sort of formed around her again.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, and she's still, some parts she doesn't quite get, but she's kind of, sees this family reunited, she's kind of maybe yearning for maybe a little bit of normality, or some kind of sense of that.
Yeah.
What she has lost, and can she get that back again with Elias and with her current situation? I don't know. You can read a lot into it, but it could probably all be proven wrong by the end of the next episode. Who knows?
Yeah, you kind of get the idea that Ash and I and other fairy folk perhaps understand humans more than Elias does. Because obviously Ash and I seems to enjoy understanding
like torturing them.
Yes, putting them through tasks.
Yeah. Being a bit pedantic, to be honest, and I was like, "Well, if you didn't mean it, you shouldn't have said it out loud." But yeah, but
if you say anything out loud, if you say it out loud, I get to fucking do whatever I want. That's my law. Yeah. I am magic.
Damn, it's entrapment.
I did like the little brother thinking Elias's head was cool, though.
Oh, and Elias not having a fucking clue what to do about a kid like poking him in the head. It's like, what? I turned into a girl. Fucking deal. It's fine.
Does this come off? Yeah.
Is that your face? No, stop.
I am a highly respected magician. Please, decorum, please, sir.
I also learned that the fox pelt that Ash and Eyes gave her allows her to turn into a bear.
Yeah, it's just a general turn into animal fucking pelt.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting the fox, and it's just like a fucking grizzly bear shows up, and you're like, oh, shit. That's actually more useful.
Can the fox like move faster and track better?
Man, no, but that she can turn into different things is very useful.
Mm.
A bear's got a bigger nose. Maybe that's the reason why, because that was his hint. He did give a hint, so I think that was his intention the whole time.
Yeah.
He's got to make it fair for them. He seems to be.
It's a pretty unfair thing, as Chise points out to him. It's like, dude, you stand to lose nothing here.
He seems to be a semi on a bit of big and just kind of imprison people like in an extra dimensional kind of field whenever he chooses. So he's kind of like throwing a bone kind of in that regard.
He does trap Elias and the kid brother in a puddle, a river. I'm not exactly sure where that was. A body of water. Hmm.
Probably inside the reflection or something crazy like that.
Yeah, yeah.
The old mine. The old abandoned mine.
Righty-ho. Talking of people with godlike power, it's Dragon Ball Super, episode 126. Surpass even a god, Vegeta's desperate blow.
So, like, Vegeta's, like, the best, right? He's the hero.
Yeah.
I have cast off my worldly ambitions, but my wife, my children, the friends I've met along the way.
Well, not much. Most of the family.
I know, but I was like, that's the hero's thing. It's like, that's the good guy's speech.
Yes.
Vegeta loves his family. No, we don't. Yes, you do. You said it so. It says so in your mind. We know you love your family.
Yes, because you can't imagine Goku making that speech.
I know, right? That's like, that's not a thing. It's like, no, my beloved son, who I fucking barely pay attention to. And, oh yeah, that's right, my other son, who looks exactly like me.
I can't die now. It's almost lunchtime. Ah.
And my wife, who I've never kissed.
Yeah, yeah, I still consider that canon. dear.
Yeah, so... Frieza's back on his feet quicker than I thought he would be. He's then knocked off his feet again pretty pronto.
And then he hides for the rest of the episode.
He's known for recovering from things that would lay out a normal.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So,
this is kind of par for the course for him.
Yeah, so Vegeta's got to take care of him. Android 17 is...
I like Android 17 very simple plan of, I'll drop rocks on him.
Yes.
It's a good plan. I mean, like, I don't think anyone else has tried that this freaking tournament so far.
Gene forgot, though, that Toppo can destroy everything that touches him, so it wasn't a very great plan. I suppose
you can hit him with solid objects, you know, which is why you can punch him without getting destroyed.
There's only four bits left, so it's basically just, at this point, you can just slow them down.
Yeah, just run around and don't get hit.
Mm-hmm. Now, by the end of the episode, it's 4-on-1. Of course,
I feel like that's going to change quickly.
Yeah, one's injured, one has no power left, and we don't know where Frieza is. He's not been knocked out.
Frieza's probably hiding up for the most opportune time for Frieza to win. Yeah.
Also, half the battlefield has disappeared.
Oh, that's right. They blew up half the stage. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Dear. But there's some good bits in this, yeah.
Yeah, I actually think Vegeta was brought in the first place because it wasn't like, oh, he's just for to kind of challenge him and saying, oh, Toppo, I'll take you out because you've been calling me the second banana before, well, I'll show you what's what. No, it's like there's a little nod between Jiren and Toppo because Jiren's taking on the two lads.
It's not that he's struggling, it's just that, like he said, he can't predict because they don't work well together. Yeah. It's like, take care of this guy.
But also, like Frieza is out and 17 doesn't seem to be as much of a threat, so it's like, okay, well, just don't lay off those guys. You're fine. You're on fucking max god destruction mode. They're not more than you. It's like, you and me would take out one of these guys each and then they'll make it all easier. All the smoother from the finish.
That's the first time I've seen Jiren actually use teamwork in this entire thing. Mm. Right at the end, yeah.
He wants to go for the Shiro win, because if Thomas went all out, then no, he may as well make use of that and direct it towards another thing. Cause, well,
I'm
not fighting Vegeta, I'm fighting Goku. That's a guy who once stepped up to me, so I'm going to stand up to him. So just to get rid of this other dude, he's bothering me.
And you get a little bit of cross fighting in this. I was kind of hoping for a lot more of that in this tournament, but it tends to just laser focus on whoever we're talking about in the given episode.
Where
17 and Frieza apparently get hit by a random blast from Jiren, you know, that kind of thing.
It was just like the waves of force from the punches between the three of them interrupted the other fights.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, all right, those guys are still doing shit. What are they doing? Punching the shit out of each other? Okay.
Just a punch.
Vegeta has loads of good bits. That fucking thing where, like, Toppo is like, oh, I fucking give it up on justice. If justice can't work, it's useless. And Vegeta's just going like, you're just a coward who'll give up on a thing that he cares about if it doesn't suit him. That's dumb. And just punching straight through his fucking destructo balls or whatever the fuck those things are called. Mm. I was just like, that was sweet. Again, it was the heroic moment. It was so odd. I'm still weirded out that Vegeta is like fucking hero.
But it also makes it more tragic for Toppo is that he gave up everything he believed in and still lost.
Yeah. Well, it looked like Vegeta fucking gave up himself kind of thing. It's like, and the flashback to the old animation.
Yeah.
Is he using that move? Vegeta explode everything move.
Yeah. People are saying, oh, that's pretty unfair of a comparison, Dragon Ball Super over there, but that they did pick a very good cut out of the old series to flashback to, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, not entirely fair. I mean, we've had some fun, astounding fucking scenes play out in Super the last couple of weeks, so. But as well, it's kind of a spirit, because that was for sacrifice for a greater good then, because Toppo may Taupo hasn't quite given up of everything, even since. You know, he's having given up just to him. You haven't given up so much that you're going to win the form. Blow yourself up. It takes a fucking real fucking hero to fucking go the distance and fucking give up truly everything, but give it up for a good cause, a noble cause, like putting your family and your friends and your own universe. So
I was just worried he was gonna like explode Taupo like he did Boo, and I was just like, well, that's a disqualification. Even if you blew yourself up, you're still disqualified. Yeah.
He's tougher now than he was back then, so he just blew his clothes off.
He blew his shirt off. Thank God his pants stayed on. dear.
Next episode, it is 17 versus Jiren.
That doesn't sound good. dear. I would really like for this episode for it to not end Goku versus Jiren, but I feel like it can't not do that, right? It's not physically possible for Dragon Ball to do something different. They actually like teamwork and beat him, that kind of way.
Well,
we've got 4 minutes on the clock. So, I mean, like, and there's four guys left. I'm kind of like,
I would nearly just kind of afford, like, just coordinating amongst themselves. They have some kind of fucking desperate plan maneuver that just kind of holds off Jiren.
That would be great. And just win by numbers.
But we know this is going to head towards, Goku does Ultra Instinct and then fights him and probably fights him to a draw then or something like that. Because that's probably like another
maybe outcome. He fights him to the draw and freaking Frieza is just hiding. He's like, I'm here, so that's a win because 2-1.
So I'm the hero. I bailed you guys out. It's I'm the reason you all won, so give me my wish. You promised.
Dear.
Well, yeah, that could be the case if Jiren and Goku managed to knock themselves each other out at the same time in a cross-counter situation.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm imagining.
Okay.
Because if one built up Jiren as this fucking indomitable force, and Goku is just struggling to keep up with him, and even he's trying to access this new ability that even like the gods can't do at will, at least. So it would probably be kind of a similar outcome to what happened with Beerus, where he lost that fight, but you know, but he won in the right way, I suppose. He won the respect of Beerus, which was enough to save the planet. That could play a similar kind of outcome here, where Goku doesn't quite win because fucking everything is stacked against him in every regard, but he'd win enough within the confines of the rules. Or who knows? Maybe this one shot Jiren as soon as he goes Ultra and then
7 episodes left, I think. Yeah,
7 episodes in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Could be overtime in this yet. This might code
I guess, yeah. Frieza might start shit, and then it's like, okay, we have to do overtime now because Frieza is fucking around.
I love if it went to a draw, and then there'll just be like a stupid fucking tiebreak, and then
now it's the punching machine. Oh dear.
Roddy ho, that's it for this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back here next week for more. But before we go, let's find out what's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain. Guys, what secrets have you got for us?
Secret to everybody, including us, because I don't know what's happening, because I'm going to be moving to another country the next week, just under 2 weeks. So
really good excuse.
May not have time to do it, but by the time you hear this, you will be able to come to the end of our Brad Bird career catalogue with the Iron Giant, and you can hear all about that over on the site or on your favourite podcast feeder directory catching thing.
Ronnie Ho. So when you hear this, you'll be able to go back and listen to what are we looking at here? It will be a famous anime podcast for 2003. And then next week we will have Venus Wars with a special guest from Ace Comics, Leon Everett, where one of us had seen it before and the other two had not seen it ever before. Find out what we think then. and the return of a stupid quiz for the first time in 2018.
Yay!
It was okay. The one for the Yo-Kai Watch one went a bit better.
But don't shoot it down before people have even had to listen to it, Brian. Come on.
There was the Yo-Kai Watch one was easier to answer. The Venus Wars one was more like a typical Brian quiz of some really convoluted questions.
Yeah, but then listening to the people flail at trying to grab an answer was part of fun.
True. So listen to that, and also listen to this next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.